Welcome to Music Scene. I'm your host, Nanette Weiser, and with me today is a legendary saxophonist, Jeremy Carter. Welcome, Jeremy, to Radio St. Pete.
Thanks for having me. It's so great to be with you.
So, Jeremy, you have an interesting story. You are originally from Omaha North Magnet High School. Tell me a little bit about growing up and how you got interested in music.
I went to St. Richard's Catholic when I was in elementary school for 5th and 6th grade. And once I got there, that was my first music classes there. And I really didn't take it seriously until probably the summer between my 10th and 9th and 10th grade, between freshman and sophomore year. My saxophone mostly stayed under the bed for the first few years if I wasn't in class. I started to check out Charlie Parker and Coltrane and just a really eclectic mix of music, and I was able to sort of apply some of that to what I was doing. It wasn't just etudes and scales and things. The music kind of came to life. And so almost immediately, I started to take it a lot more seriously. I was appearing in bars and clubs as early as 14.
Was there a jazz scene in Omaha in that area?
Not a really strong scene, but there were a few guys. Luigi Waits was one of my mentors. He's no longer with us. Preston Love, who also played in the Count Basie Orchestra, he played with Ray Charles. So there were a couple guys that were around that I was able to take mentorship from. While the music scene wasn't that strong, the arts community as a whole was pretty strong there in Omaha, if that makes sense.
Did anybody in your family play music or play even records that you kind of sourced you and inspired you?
Yes. My parents had a really eclectic mix of music. Some of my earliest memories of I think the first record that I put on down in the basement was Old 33 of Stevie Wonder's My Sharia Moore. And, I'll never forget it. But it's in terms of life and the practicality of being a musician, my parents borderline discouraged me from playing.
Right. And look at you now. So how did you end up here in the Tampa Bay area? I understand that you studied at University of South Florida.
Very briefly, yes. My parents retired to Tampa in the late 90s, and I was coming down here for a vacation, honestly, and this was in, July of 2001 is when I came to Florida, and it was supposed to be just a vacation, and I'm still here.
Well, Tampa, even then, we had Fred Johnson, and so much was going on. Tell us a little bit about getting into the jazz scene here and becoming a musician here.
My path was a little bit unconventional in that I started off as sort of a jazz player, but almost immediately, like once you get out into the working scene, you have to do more than just that. It's really difficult to sustain yourself, to make a living playing just jazz. And so almost immediately, I became sort of like a journeyman. I went out and I was, I started doing solo stuff. I was playing with small ensembles and in every genre you could imagine.
Oh, I see you toured and played with some of the biggest in the business. I mean, Los Pericos, Los Auténticos, I'm going to say this wrong, Decadente, Tony Monaco, and Terrace Martin. How did that all happen?
The Los Auténticos Decadentes and Los Pericos, I was introduced to those two bands from my good friend and trumpeter James Suggs. He was living in Buenos Aires for about 8 years, and when he moved to the St. Pete area, he still had those contacts, and I think Los Pericos was the first one that was doing an American tour, and they needed a sax player, so he introduced me to them, and I think that was a little over 10 years ago, 2015 or 16, and yeah, I've just kept a relationship with them ever since. They're amazing.
It's like a family here. Brian Hughes, James Suggs, John Lamb. It seems like all of you rotate around this incredible vortex of jazz power, don't you? So when did you first get introduced to James?
Yeah, I've met him through Nate Najjar, I believe. You know what? Yes, Nate Najjar was working with James when he first moved to town, and he was kind of helping him getting his feet into the scene. And I just happened to be having a party here at my house. I was having a jazz party. I invited a bunch of musicians over, and James came over to that party. That was the first time that we met. And we hit it right off. We just started talking, and yeah.
It's exciting, and we're just really excited about James upcoming. I think he's doing Miles Davis next. So let's talk about your fantastic November 7th, 8 p.m. at the Palladium, and you are actually an artist in residence. Let's share with the listeners of Radio St. Pete what that means.
Well, I've been working with honestly, I sometimes forget this because I play the Palladium so often, and I actually did the first concert at the Palladium side door. This must have been like 2003. This is before the current side door program, and I don't even think SPC was involved in the program back then. I could be mistaken, but yeah, since Paul Wilborn and Damon and those guys have taken over, I've been working there extensively for over 10 years now. It's my relationship as an artist in residence started off with their creative class grant that they were issuing to a few chosen artists in the community every year. I think they started doing that maybe 2018, if I'm not mistaken. And I've just stayed on. I've received the grant a couple, if not few, a few times. And then since, becoming somewhat ineligible to receive the grant any longer, I've stayed on as sort of an artist in residence. So I help choose the next classes of creative, or I help choose the next creative class, rather.
Well, I love what's coming up. My favorite things, I mean, some of your favorite artists, my favorite artist, John Coltrane and the Bee Gees. I can't wait to see what you do with the Bee Gees. So I'm guessing that you're taking tunes that you love and kind of giving them an unexpected twist and a little bit of jazz fusion accent. Tell us a little bit about this project, and then we'll talk about some of the people that are performing with you.
Okay, yeah, like I was saying, I like to play all different styles. Like my work with Los Pericos, they were doing more reggae and funk and things like that. This concert that I just did at the New Temper Performing Arts Center was more traditional jazz focused. This next project, my favorite things on 11/7, that is going to be more funk groovy inspired. Not that it will lack any jazz component, but it'll definitely be a little more contemporary. With me that night, I'm really, really happy to have Billy Norris, who has spent the past 20 years, better part of the last 20 years, as music director, producer, and guitarist for country music sensation Gavin DeGraw. So that's really exciting. I met Billy when he was really young, just getting out of high school and going out to work with one of the Grammy bands, and we've stayed in touch. He's down back in the area, so I have him working with me that night. Also, Patrick Bettison, who was just with me on Saturday, fantastic harmonica player, composer, pianist, Elias Tona, just another wonderful musician. I feel it's just an embarrassment of riches in terms of talent. Elias Tona is the bassist for Al Di Meola and his touring band. For those that don't know, Al Di Meola played with Miles and, I mean, just countless others, and he's carved out a wonderful career for himself. Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. Billy's going to be singing a little bit, not to give too much away.
And you have Rod Alnord on drums, is that right, as well?
I have Rod Alnord on drums as well. He's the youngest member of our group, but he's very fiery, and yeah, he comes to play every night.
I can't tell you how exciting, this is the most exciting time of year. You've got the Clearwater Jazz Holiday, you've got the Suncoast Jazz Festival, and I believe that you're going to be at that as well. And then the Palladium has just lined up incredible stuff. Tell us a little bit what you're going to be doing at Suncoast Jazz Festival, November 21st through the 23rd.
Well, that's interesting. I'm going to be sitting in or joining Paul Wilborn, the director.
Oh, you are going to do it with Eugenie and Paul.
Yes, I'm going to be hanging out with Eugenie and Paul. and with their project that they're bringing to the Suncoast. It was, I guess, supposed to kind of be a surprise, but I hope I didn't spoil anything.
No, they've already told us on air, you know, that what it is. So you can get you can say it.
Okay. And then I'll be working with Theo Valentin. I'll be working with her group. I'll also be working with James. He's going to have a feature set because we did an album. Oh, I have it right here.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask you about.
Yeah, earlier this year we recorded James's second album called For All We Know, and that was just a hoot, for lack of a better word. We had such a good time. That had Herlin Riley on drums, which was, he was with the Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra and went Marsalis for a very long time. Alejandro Arenas on bass. Seth Finch, a really young but just phenomenal pianist out of New Orleans. Allison Nash, who is another just incredible St. Pete talent. She's making a lot of waves in the music scene right now. And James's cousin, Brandon Connolly, did some auxiliary horns for us on that project. So I'll be heading up that with James.
Was that an Arbor Records production?
That was another Arbor Records production. So
let's stop and talk about Arbor Records, because first of all, we love having them. We do a lot of coverage of them. Let's tell our listeners that this wonderful, based in Clearwater, recording studio that even Ken Paplowski records at. Tell them a little bit about the Arbor Records experience and how it's extraordinarily important to jazz.
They are. I mean, you said it. They are extraordinarily important to jazz. The lengths that they go to support musicians, the freedom that they're allowed to execute their vision. Like this project that we did with James, we did up at Clear Tracks in Clearwater, but his first album, he flew up to New York, and he was he recorded at up over in New Jersey. Oh man, I'm drawing a blank, but it's like a legendary
right
a studio up in New York, and like there doesn't seem to be any limitations on your ability to carry out your vision, and it's amazing. He had an all-star lineup for that. They don't give you any parameters or any boundaries when it comes to you putting your project together, and it's crucially important. Adrian Cunningham, I know La Lucha has recorded with them.
Yep, we're going to be interviewing Professor Cunningham and also Tuba Skinny, yeah, and La Lucha, of course, and, you know, it really is amazing. And Jeremy, I want to ask you this. What is the jazz scene like now versus when you first came? Don't you feel it's exploded? Because, it's just everywhere.
I think it really has. There's a lot of things that have affected that. I mean, obviously, times change. Like, the way that listeners absorb music is different than it was now, 25 years on. I mean, a lot of people don't even have CD players. You know what I mean? Like, when you get a CD, it's kind of nostalgic. You know, it's almost like gone the way of the cassette tape or the 8-track. You know, people are so quick to consume their art. And so I guess it's kind of bad in one way that people don't spend as much time with each individual artist and song or genre as they used to, but they're listening to a lot more. You know what I mean? Like they consume music a lot quicker than they used to.
Absolutely.
So it opens up a lot of opportunities for musicians.
Well, speaking of opportunities, after the I'm sure there'll be other pop-up things, but I know that you're also going to give us a holiday special at the Imagine Museum. Is that December 20th? And tell us what we can expect there, Jeremy.
That's another somewhat residency that I've been doing here in the last couple of years at the Imagine Museum in downtown St. Pete in 19th Street and Central. It's a wonderful museum. They have all kinds of different art there, and they have started to support and embrace the musical arts as of late. And so it's a show that kind of a informal show that I do, but it's been so well attended. I think the last time I was there, I just play there by myself. I do a solo show. And the last time I was there, I believe we had just about 150 people And it's really intimate, sort of informal. I kind of do a meet and greet with everyone that's there. I play, I chat with everyone. We do some Q&A, and it's wonderful.
You know, it's like a New York, it's like a New York private club when like Bobby Short used to play, and just this is what I'm starting to feel. I was at your last one, and it was very intimate. Oh yeah, it was very intimate, and so you know, you kind of feel like you're in the Carlisle or something special. So, folks, if you've just joined us, we're talking to the one and only Jeremy Carter. His group will be performing at the Palladium, My Favorite Things, November 7th at 8 o'clock. He will be at the Suncoast Jazz Festival, November 21 through 23, and at the Imagine Museum on the 20th. And we'll have all of the links to all of his social and Instagram for you to follow. Jeremy, I want to ask you a little bit about the music you're writing and about the song that we're going to be listening to at the end of this interview, Frequency. Tell us about that.
Frequency was a project and kind of a musical theme that I started digging into a couple years ago, just because of its natural, inherent connection with music. We deal with a lot of frequencies, and then once I got into it, it's kind of spilled over into this the physical realm, like atoms, you know, like we're all kind of made up of vibrations in the universe and the galaxy. But musically, it was just a really hip song that I thought everybody could get. It felt really accessible, for lack of a better term. I didn't feel as if it was a jazz song or a Latin song or a contemporary song. I just felt like it was just something really accessible.
A really good song. And you know what? We don't need any labels these days on what's what. You know, it's just in exploring the individual artist. And you have a lot of great videos and music. So, folks, before we segue into Frequency, Jeremy, I want to ask you, what's inspiring you now? What are you listening to? What's on your playlist?
Wow. I'm listening to... I'm all over the place. I'm listening to rock. I'm really digging into the music for My Favorite Things. I have so many different projects going on, so I'm trying to like get as many influences as possible. But there's Coltrane, there's Stevie Wonder, there's Bee Gees, there's Donny Hathaway, there's Michael Jackson. I just recently did a Michael Jackson show at the Palladium, which was amazing.
It was amazing, absolutely. We hope that you bring that back again.
Yeah, I'll be revisiting a little bit of the material that we did there. Not exactly the same way, though.
Well, you know what? Now I know what I'm going to be listening to when I'm not listening to Jeremy Carter. Folks, I hope that you've enjoyed this interview with Jeremy Carter. Again, the Palladium will have all the links to the information and where he's performing. Jeremy, parting words to the Radio St. Pete listeners before we listen to Frequency.
I think I forgot. November 8th, I'll also be at the Museum of American Arts and Craft Movement in downtown St. Pete. There'll be a link on my social for that as well, like the very next night. 11/7, we're at the Palladium. 11/8, we're right around the corner at the museum, and so that's going to be fantastic. 11/14, James Suggs, Miles Davis concert back at the Palladium. And, support live music. Come out and support live music as much as possible. We need you.
Thank you so much for Radio St. Pete. I'm your music scene host, Nanette Weiser. And now let's give a listen to Frequency.
Thank you.